Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Friends, welcome back to another episode of the Roto-World Football Podcast. As you know, it is the most important podcast in the universe. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here for the first round of the playoffs. Did I say my name is Josh Norris? If not, it is. John Joseph Norris, to be exact, on my license and my birth certificate. Yes, first round of the playoffs. Later on, I will have Roto Pat as normal, but not as normal. Ray Summerlin will be joining us as well. It's not just these one-on-one conversations. We're adding another member to the family on this Friday episode. That means, first up, it is Evan Silva. Evan's matchups column will be posted on Roto-World for this weekend's games.
You know, because your name was John Joseph, I feel like you could have been nicknamed JoJo.
I'm very glad I'm not a JoJo. We've talked about this before. Very glad I'm not a JJ, because I think there's only one decent JJ out there in the entire universe, and we all know and somewhat love him in some ways.
JJ Nelson.
JJ Watt is the one I was referring to, Evan.
Of course, of course.
That's the only one out there. Yeah, it's Evan Scott Silva, correct?
Yeah, Evan Scott Silva. That's correct.
Did you ever want to be known as a different name?
Probably everybody like wishes they could switch their name at some point, you know.
What was yours?
I just thought that Evan was like a weird name for some reason. And so I wanted like a more normal name when I was like seven. But yeah. I don't know. I mean, did you ever want to switch your name?
Yes, I absolutely did. Yeah. I can remember the moment I was driving with my mom. We were going to meet my brother and my dad up in the mountains. And I turned to my mom, and I was around seven. I turned to my mom and I said, "Mom, I want to be Tommy." And and she asked, "Why? Why do you want to be Tommy?" And I said, "Because he's the green and white ranger."
Oh, yeah.
That's why I wanted to be Tommy. I have a lot of stories of Power Rangers. I might have told this one already, and if so, I apologize. But since it is around the holidays, I used to love going to Toys R Us. Evan, I think I'm sure everyone close to our age loved going to Toys R Us. And it was right at like the peak of Power Rangers for me. And so they had those belts that like they hold the middle of it and go, "It's morphin' time." And then they like, you know, go into their suits and then blah, blah, blah. Anyways, they were selling those belts, right? Those things that they hold in their hands when they say that at Toys R Us. And I thought if I actually picked one up and did that, then I would turn into a Power Ranger. And like, I didn't want that responsibility at all. So instead of touching it, I walked by it, paced beside it for at least 10 minutes, just looking at the thing instead of actually trying it. So that shows you, Evan, how brave I am and how I would never save the world. I apologize.
You're forgiven.
Evan, I should open this again with the same question of how open do you feel that this playoff hunt is this season with the 12 teams involved?
I think it's pretty open. I mean, my focus right now has been just laser on the wild card round.
Right.
And not necessarily, you know, making any sort of like Super Bowl predictions or anything like that. So it's just been totally on these four games. But I think that we've seen that every team is pretty beatable, maybe with the exception of the Saints.
Because they're at home.
Yeah, right. And they are at home, and they have a significant home field advantage. And so I think that and Kansas City is also at home, and they have a huge home field advantage. They did lose a home game to the Chargers late in the year. But, man, I mean, they dominated that game. Yep. And Phillip Rivers just went absolute nuts in the final 5 minutes or so. But, I mean, I think that those teams are clearly at the top, but you can never rule out the Patriots. The Rams, you know, I think we're going to see a healthy Todd Gurley in the playoffs. We're going to see them back to as healthy as we've seen them in the last month plus since they played that game against the Chiefs and beat the Chiefs in L.A., I think that the Colts are really dangerous from the wild card round itself. I think that the Ravens are pretty dangerous too. I mean, with how they are, and we talked about them a lot last week, and we're not going to talk about them on this podcast because we're focused on NFC. But you can go back and listen to last week's podcast why they are so dangerous and difficult to beat. I think that Chicago also is very dangerous if they can get their passing game back to the explosive level that it was playing at around midseason, because they are really, really deep in the pass catcher core. They have two multi-phase running backs or running backs that can win in different that complement each other very well, and their defense is just it's downright nasty, and they're getting back Eddie Jackson, one of the best playmakers in all of football.
A few things. One, we will be discussing the Ravens. That's later on with Ray and Pat. I completely mismanaged and misplanned this podcast, but that is not surprising to any of you out there. I really, with Evan, should have previewed the Saturday games, and then with Pat and Ray, should have previewed the Sunday games. But no, my friends, no. Instead, I decided to do AFC versus NFC. If anything, we're just being different. So that's how we're going to do it. Evan, let's start off with the 8:20 game on Saturday, because I'm talking about NFC with you, and that is Seattle against Dallas. 43-point over-under, Dallas as 1.5-point home favorites. This is a rematch of a game that happened earlier in the season. This is two teams, Evan, that have been on real streaks. I mean, Dallas are 7-2 after trading for Amari Cooper, and Seattle finished the season 7-3 in their last 10 games.
Yeah, and I've noticed a lot of strong opinions on both sides, just kind of in the football community. Oh, I think that the Cowboys are gonna win. Like, this is a clear win for the Cowboys. Oh, I think this is a clear win for the Seahawks. And to me, it's the game that is the most difficult on the wild card slate to handicap. First of all, right now, Dallas is a 2-point favorite at most spots. Between 1 and 2, and the total has moved up, which I think is interesting because both of these teams kind of are built similarly, or they envision themselves as being built similarly. They're both run committed teams. They've both got quarterbacks that can move, and they are both teams that run block better than they pass block. And they are both teams that, well, I think that Dallas has a significant advantage in terms of the strength of their defense, and Seattle can be run on. So that is the biggest edge that the Cowboys have in this game. They don't want to drop back Dak to pass very much in this game. And I know that he's just coming off an awesome game against the Giants, but I think that they need to try to control this game with their rushing attack. They gave Zeke Elliott week 17 off. The Seahawks in the second half of the season were not good against the run, but they were very dangerous as a pass rushing team with Jerron Reed up the middle and with Frank Clark off the edge. And the Cowboys are not a good pass protecting team at all. Tyron Smith, not the player that he used to be. Both of their guards have dealt with injuries. Travis Frederick, of course, has been out all season. Lyle Collins, pretty inconsistent. So, and they are, I mean, they're bottom five in a ton of pass rush metrics. Sacks allowed, they've allowed the most sacks, second most sacks in the NFL. They're 28th in Football Outsiders pass protection metric. But they are at home, and they have they're another team that played so much better at home than on the road all year. So I think that they should be favored, but I still, you know, Russ is so dangerous, man. Russ is so dangerous, and the Cowboys showed some cracks in run defense late in the year. Marlon Mack ran on him, and Saquon Barkley ran on him.
I'm not even joking when I say this, Evan. Over under 27 and a half touches for Ezekiel Elliott in this game.
Over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't we just see a game with him like 35, 40 touches? Like
he had a 40 touch game.
I mean, that's Derrick Henry at Alabama stuff.
Yeah.
And they're getting him involved in the passing game, and that's been a huge difference with Dallas this season. And also a major difference has been Amari Cooper. Evan, that's kind of a trajectory that is not an inconsistent one, but an interesting one with Amari Cooper, because as soon as he was added to the roster, as soon as he was added to the team, he made big plays and then against Philly took over that game, right? But meanwhile, I think in the last, 3 or 4 weeks, he's done very little. So is he kind of the key piece in this offense to put them up on the scoreboard, which is obviously where they want to be throughout the contest?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, he did finish slow. 3 straight games below 35 yards to close out the year. He had massive home-road splits with Dallas. He played 5 home games with Dallas, and he played 4 road games with Dallas. He averaged over 110 yards per game at home, and he averaged 43.5 yards per game with 0 touchdowns on the road. With Zeke, though, I mean, yeah, this guy, they need to get this dude the ball as much as they possibly can. So they had their bye in week 8. From weeks 9 through 16, only Christian McCaffrey among running backs had more targets, catches, and receiving yards than Zeke Elliott. Zeke Elliott was number 2 in the NFL in all of those categories until he rested in week 17. Seahawks gave up a ton of production all year to opposing RBs. You know, they lost Michael Kendricks. KJ Wright has not really been the same player, dealing with a bunch of injuries. They gave up the 6th most catches and 3rd most receiving yards per game to opposing running backs. And I think that the Cowboys need to make that a priority. Get the ball out of when Dak does drop back to pass, get the ball out of his hands quickly. You do not want Frank Clark and Jerron Reed bearing down on him.
You know what? And I didn't get to watch the game, but I believe in that final week, and you mentioned it, under 35 yards for Amari Cooper, he still got 11 targets though, right? Like it seemed like they tried to get him restarted and it just didn't work out. So that's one to follow. And really with Seattle, Evan, I know that they've wanted to, with Brian Schottenheimer, wanted to play up on the scoreboard and run the football all season long, right? Like that's a Pete Carroll, Brian Schottenheimer, wet dream. But I will always go back to the thinking that even if they do go down on the scoreboard, they still have Russell Wilson, right? They still have the ability to work back from a deficit. I'm not so sure, and we saw it at times, but I'm not so sure if Dallas has that same capability in this game.
I'm with you. And Doug Baldwin, he took week 14 off, and I think it did him a lot of good because over the final 3 weeks, his production skyrocketed, his usage skyrocketed. In weeks 15 through 17, he was number 7 in the NFL in air yards. He had 11 more targets than any other Seahawk, and he's running 65% of his routes in the slot. You want to avoid Chidobe Awuzie and Byron Jones where you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And you want to go after Anthony Brown, who missed time late in the season with a recurring back injury. Pro Football Focus charged Anthony Brown with 27 of 36 targets allowed, 75%, for 326 yards and 3 touchdowns after the Cowboys' Week 8 bye. He allowed 1.6 yards per slot coverage snap. That was 2nd most among 27 qualified slot defenders in Weeks 9 through 17. So that is going to be a matchup to watch, a matchup for the Seahawks to potentially exploit, especially if they fall behind. I think that they will be able to get the ball to Doug Baldwin pretty routinely in the slot.
One of my most recent sweats, Evan, was Doug Baldwin in week 16. It helped me not get relegated from the NBC Sports A-League, was his performance against the Kansas City Chiefs. And it didn't happen until the end of the third quarter, right? It was that long touchdown that he caught that his hip hit in before he went out. And then that tip him to himself and almost scored the late touchdown as well. He looked great in that game, which is great to see from Doug Baldwin, who we were excited about, but knew he was entering the year hurt. Evan, at the top of the show, you mentioned that teams have a heavy home advantage in this playoffs. Chicago is one of those. They face Philadelphia Sunday, 4:30, 41.5-point over-under. Chicago as 6-point favorites. The reason I say that, it maybe not so much as a team, but Mitch Trubisky, Evan, it's been a very different game for him at home. In 8 games, he has 21 touchdowns compared to just 6 touchdowns in 6 games on the road this season. But maybe more importantly, Evan, we kind of always talk about their segments of the season, right? You know, this Bears team isn't necessarily the same one that it was in week 3. Mm-hmm. But in the last 4 weeks since he's returned from that shoulder injury, Mitch Trubisky is averaging just a measly 200 total yards. That's total yards, and has accounted for just 4 touchdowns in those 4 games.
Yeah, his receiver core has been banged up, and since he's come back from his shoulder injury, he's been as inconsistent as ever as a passer. But I think that, you know, the best part of his game, I think we would all agree, and he's still progressing as a player. I mean, this is a guy who only started 1 year in college. He's still progressing as a player, but the best part of his game all year was his running ability. Like, I think he could be maybe a starting running back in the NFL if he, like, really set his sights on it, you know. And obviously he doesn't want to be that because for a million different reasons. But
literally millions of reasons.
Literally millions, right. But he is an unbelievable runner. Despite missing 2 games, he finished 5th among all quarterbacks in rushing yards. He averaged 6.2 yards per carry. That is better than all the quarterbacks that finished ahead of him in rushing, except for Josh Allen, who averaged 7.1. And then you look at the quarterbacks that have hurt the Eagles the most. So many of them are dual threat quarterbacks. Dak Prescott had 2 of his best games of the year against the Eagles. Deshaun Watson had a monster game against them in week 16. Cam Newton had a really bad first half against them, but then did whatever he wanted in the second half. Panthers came back and won that game. I believe it was in Philadelphia. He was the quarterback 3 on the week that week. Marcus Mariota, one of his best games, was the quarterback 7 in a very high scoring week for quarterbacks when he faced the Eagles. Blake Bortles didn't really play well, but he finished as a top 12 quarterback against them in that London game. So just the profile of quarterbacks that have hurt the Eagles the most, Mitchell Trubisky kind of fits that. And all of his pass catchers are expected to be available. Allen Robinson missed week 17. He was full practice this week. Anthony Miller, his arm came out of his socket again. I mean, what these dudes go through is wild, but he is expected to play. And then Taylor Gabriel left last week's game early with a rib injury. He's expected to play. Tarik Cohen finished 3rd among all NFL running backs in receiving yards. He's fully on track to play. And, man, he is going to be a very difficult assignment for the Eagles defense. It's going to be interesting to see how they deal with him, because I'm just not sure how they're going to deal with him. I mean, this guy can run a variety of pass routes. And I think that if you're playing DFS this week and you want to go a little bit off the board, I think you play Mitchell Trubisky and Tarik Cohen together.
There's a lot of positives to take from the Bears this season, obviously. Evan, is it too simplified to say this, that counting on Matt Nagy to script and game plan inside of structure with the variety of weapons he has on offense, and that's not even mentioning, you know, Trey Burton, who had a handful of games this season, who we expected more of, but is among the leaders on that team in receiving touchdowns. And then when it doesn't go inside of script, which you want then for Mitch Trubisky to be accurate, when it goes outside of structure, when it goes off script, that's when Trubisky wins with his feet and with his legs. And what's so interesting to me, Evan, is, like, I don't think that Jordan Howard has looked good this season, but it shows how good this offense can be when he's been extremely productive, you know, even when looking slow, even when looking like he's running in sand at times, because they get up on the scoreboard in those 3rd and 4th quarters and they run him downhill straight ahead, and he can pick up those chunk 3, 4, 5 yards, maybe break one, maybe get in the end zone as well. And again, that, to me, that speaks to the overall success of this Bears offense and Matt Nagy's just first season with them.
Yeah, and they've kind of committed to him more down the stretch, which makes sense because of the way that, you know, because of the style of runner that he is, over the Bears' final four games, averaging over 19 touches per game, four rushing touchdowns in his last three. In his career, and he is in with the third season of his career, so it's, you know, we're getting to a decent sample size on him from a career standpoint. He has averaged 4.2 yards per carry with 0.4 touchdowns in September, October, and November. But when December hits, when December comes, Jordan Howard, 4.6 yards per carry, 0.8 rushing touchdowns per game. And it, look, if they get a lead, and they are the biggest favorites on the slate. They are 6-point favorites, and the other wild card games, the next biggest favorite is Baltimore by 2.5 to 3. So the Bears are significantly, by a significant margin, the biggest favorites on this slate. And that very, you know, very strong correlation between rushing attempts and winning, you know, as obviously as a lot of people misconstrue that, but you know, teams that win tend to run more, not because they're running, but because they have the opportunity to run because they put themselves in winning position. So that sets up Jordan Howard to maybe have a big game against this Eagles defense that was terrible in run defense from weeks 10 through 15, allowed 5.8 yards per carry to opposing RBs during that time. And then they faced in week 16, they faced the Texans without Lamar Miller. And then in week 17, they faced just the dead Redskins team. Adrian Peterson had 4 carries for 0 yards. What are we getting from the Eagles run defense? I'm not sure. I think that Jordan Howard could have a big game in that final game of wild card weekend.
Before I let you go, Evan, we do need to talk about this Eagles offense. It has been sporadic all season. I mean, mm-hmm. We started the season with Nick Foles. Then we went to Carson Wentz. Then they traded for Golden Tate. A lot of it hasn't worked out. Now they're back to Nick Foles, obviously, because of the Carson Wentz injury. Then Darren Sproles comes out of nowhere and starts making plays when healthy again. Where is this team going into the playoffs? And is it even, like, possible to define what Nick Foles does to this offense? Or is it, like, still just small sample sizes and somehow it turns out with a positive conclusion more often than it's a negative one?
He's just such a high variance, you know, high highs, low lows sort of player. And I think that that's just what we kind of need to embrace about him. You know, there was a similar scenario last year, and it was in the divisional round, but similar situation where the Eagles, it wasn't the divisional round, it was the NFC Championship game, where the Vikings, you know, the Vikings were like playing elite defense at that time. They had, you know, weren't maybe the best defense in the NFL last year, and it was like, Nick Foles, you know, we've seen him play, you know, pretty well in some spots. And was like, but he ain't going to do it against the Vikings, you know. But then he did. And it was just like, what is going on? And that was, you know, that was one of the games where it's just like we were watching the game and you, like, don't believe it's happening.
Yeah. And you kind of wish it could restart because you wanted an awesome competitive matchup. And it wasn't that at all.
Yeah, it was just a terrible game.
It's a terrible game.
So, but I think that that's kind of what it's going to take for Philly to pull this off. You know, there's a reason that they're nearly touchdown dogs in this game. And, you know, so I think that we're going to see Vic Fangio double team Zach Ertz. And I think that, you know, it's going to come down to a lot of Alshon. This is a revenge game for Alshon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's also a revenge game for Trey Burton.
Yep.
On the other side, sort of. I think that, you know, for the trajectory of the Eagles offense, you're right, it's been a crazy season. I mean, there was about a 5-6-7 week stretch where it was like, what are they doing? And the Golden Tate trade was an absolute disaster. And they weren't they already weren't playing their 12 personnel package enough. At that time, Dallas Goedert is an absolute beast. And I know that people will, you know, cringe at this, hearing this, but he's sort of like the Gronk, and Ertz is like the Hernandez, you know, in terms of like the roles that they play.
Yeah.
And he has been an absolute beast. And in their 12 personnel package, that's one of the most efficient personnel packages in the NFL. You could go check out Ben Solak's article on it on Bleeding Green Nation. It's really, really good. It's entitled How 12 Personnel Saved the Eagles Offense. Because when they were trying to jam in Golden Tate, they had to play Dallas Goedert less. And that was an absolute disaster. They were sub-optimizing their personnel, and they've since like kind of buried Golden Tate. When he's in the game, like, he gets targets and he's, you know, sort of like a gadget player, but he's usually not in the game. And Dallas Goedert now is running more routes, playing more snaps, and their offense has been a lot better. They've also benefited from just basic regression back toward the mean, because early in the season they lost a ton of close games, and late in the season they've won a bunch of close games, you know. And so they have just kind of the regression has gone back in their favor, and that has helped as well.
You can check out Evan's full thoughts over at RotoWorld. And again, just after this break, we have Ray and Pat to break down the AFC matchups, because I'm an idiot and booked the show that way. So stay tuned. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our last Purple Mattress read of the season. Thank you so much, Purple Mattress, for sponsoring this podcast and the last few as well. Purple Mattress is different than anything else you've ever felt. And if you've ever, you know, considered buying a mattress with all that money that Santa left you, all those goodies, because you left him cookies, consider treating yourself to a Purple Mattress. It uses this brand new material that was developed by an actual rocket scientist, and it's not like the memory foam that you're used to. The Purple Mattress feels very unique because it's both firm and soft at the same time, so it keeps everything supported while still feeling really comfortable. Plus, it's breathable, so it sleeps cool. You know, and since it feels different, they want you to try it out. A 100-night risk-free trial. If you're not fully satisfied, you can return your Purple Mattress for a full refund. It's backed by a 10-year warranty, free shipping, and returns. You're going to love Purple. And right now, for you, our listeners, you'll get a free Purple pillow with the purchase of a mattress. That's in addition to the great free gifts that they're offering on the site. Just text ROTO to 474747. Again, if you buy a Purple mattress, text ROTO to 474747 to get that free pillow. Message and data rates may apply. Again, thank you for sponsoring this podcast. And welcome back, my friends. Thanks for sticking with us. You know, we thought in the new year, we should switch it up a little bit. We've been doing a lot of isolation, one-on-one time here on this podcast. So why not bring in at least one more person? Yes, one more person. So whereas I normally talk with Pat during this episode and this segment, I'm bringing in Ray someone as well. Ray, I'll even start with you. How are you, buddy?
Ooh, I'm living the dream, my friend. New year, same me. So I'm sorry to everybody else. But yeah, feeling good, feeling great. Ready for these playoffs to kick off.
Right. Already finished all your resolutions, completed those, thrown them in the trash, all that. See, stuff. Is more golf your resolution, Ray?
Well, here's a pro tip for all of you out there, is if you don't make resolutions, you can't break resolutions. So
simple. And Pat, in your wise, I'm not going to say older years, but more mature years, how are you with your newfound new year resolutions?
I've never been very much on the Ray bandwagon of why I'm a big believer in setting realistic goals, and pretty much no resolution is a realistic goal. So I don't ever set them.
Ray, there is a reason why you taught the youth of America for so long. And it's because of this great advice you've been giving us. Speaking of Ray, he and Rich completed kind of a betting preview of the weekend, which you go check out on RotoWorld. It's the four playoff matchups. As you know, we just finished up with Evan and the NFC. So here it is time for the AFC. In fact, it's the first game of the weekend. That is Indianapolis Colts at the Houston Texans, 4:30 Eastern, the correct time zone on Saturday. False. The Houston Texans are just 1.5-point home favorites in this one. Ray, it's an interesting one because the Colts have won 9 of their last 10.
Yeah, I mean, they're on a hot streak. Both these teams, interestingly, they started out poorly. The Texans started out 0-3, then a win over the Colts kind of put them into where they are now, into this kind of stratosphere. The Colts started out 1-5, and then since then, as you mentioned, have been incredibly hot. And this is one of three rematches that we have this weekend. So it's going to be a weekend of rematches. This one, obviously, since it's a divisional game, this one they played twice already. The Colts winning in Houston, the Texans winning in Indianapolis. So you look at all those, both those games were three-point games. One of them went to overtime. I mean, you look at all of this, and you're expecting, I think, a close game. The line says that it's going to be a close game. This is one of those games where you kind of, at least in my opinion, you throw your hands up in the air and go, well, I expect that it's going to be close, but picking who's going to win it, that's going to be really tricky, I think.
Yeah, Pat, I forgot to mention this is a 48.5 total. What stands out to you with this one? Because we talked about, I didn't talk with you, I talked with Evan last week about the Colts, and man, what a run they've been on, as I've mentioned. But the Houston Texans, as Ray said, have gone on their own hot streak in the middle part of the season and won, what, 9 or 10 straight?
Yeah, I believe they've both won 13 in a row, if you want to fact check that. Coming into the playoffs, very hot, both teams. To me, the four games, this is the one that I kind of have, I feel like the least of a feel for, kind of like the most true toss-up-y, and kind of this weird, like, they're kind of like, they're mirror images of each other in some ways. Obviously, different styles of quarterback, but both kind of, I was going to say, the Colts, they're both one kind of one-man bands in the passing offense. That's not really true. I think maybe Eric Ebron, you know, the existence of a viable second weapon for the Colts offense, passing offense, could be kind of a nice, if you're looking for differentiators here. Deshaun Watson has been all year, you know, cannot get settled that number two receiver spot. You know, maybe Kiki QT is going to play this week. If not, he's got to make do with someone who spells the name Vincent, V-Y-N-C-I-N-T, as his number two receiver. And the way that I just kind of look at this game is that I just feel like all the Texan strengths are kind of just like slightly better strengths for the Colts. I feel like Colts playing slightly better on defense right now, offense. Texans have been humming, but it's kind of like overall, like the Colts is their 11 starters in offense better than the Texans right now. And the game is in Houston, which of course is a big edge in the playoffs. But to me, it's a toss up that slightly favors the Colts.
Ray, I mean, this is the highest total of the weekend, 48.5. To me, on paper, you look for big time players defensively, right? And Houston has that.
Sharice Wright.
Well, Houston has that in Jadeveon Clowney and in JJ Watt. Indianapolis, I mean, sure, I guess they've had a few that have come out of nowhere and surprised people.
Darius Leonard, dog. Best player in the whole game.
Again, but if we're talking about, Ray, where defenses have gone now, it's to make that big time play in those critical moments down the stretch just to create a turnover, stop them on fourth down. And to me, Ray, the Texans have that. But again, 48.5 is the highest of the weekend.
Well, that's actually why I've kind of hesitant to pick the Colts. I agree that just looking at these teams on paper, I like the Colts more. But if you go and look at, you mentioned it, playmakers and what Houston's able to do, Houston's ability to take the ball away, Andrew Luck's propensity for giving the ball away, at least recently. I mean, the Colts have not really protected the ball. They have the eighth most giveaways this season. Luck has at least one interception in 6 of his last 8 games. And you go to the other side, the Texans have the fourth most takeaways this season and the second best turnover differential in the league. So I agree with Pat that I look at this and I think that the Colts should win. I think that their defense is good and doesn't have a glaring weakness like the Texans do. The Texans' pass defense is not good. I mean, Andrew Luck is thrown in his 2 games for 863 yards and 6 touchdowns against them. They've given up nearly 400 yards in 2 games of their last 5, including Luck. Another game, they give up 471 yards to Nick Foles. Like, this pass defense is struggling. And it can certainly be exploited. I don't think the Colts have holes like that on defense, but the Colts also, I don't think, have, like you mentioned, the playmakers to force those turnovers. Deshaun Watson hasn't thrown an interception since like week 8. It's been a long time since he has. So yeah, that's really the tricky bit here is where are the big plays going to come from? If the big plays are coming on offense, and T.Y. Hilton just baptizes the Texans like he tends to do in Houston, then this could be a different thing. But if Luck throws two interceptions, then you have a bit of a different game. That's why I really see this as a toss-up.
That's an interesting point, Ray, because like we can count on DeAndre Hopkins to make plays no matter who he's against, right? We've seen Eric Ebron make plays this year, and T.Y. Hilton, it's sporadic. I mean, at points in the season, it wasn't typical T.Y. Hilton in terms of winning down the field, but we know that their connection has been strong. But it's not necessarily like reliant on that with the Colts offense, right? Because we know that Andrew Luck is just going to spread the football around, whether it's Zach Pascal, if that's even his name, and Nyheim Hines and Mo Alie-Cox and whoever else. Like, it doesn't matter what their name in the back of their jersey is, like, Andrew Luck is going to find the open man and hit them. Meanwhile, you have like the ultimate playmaker mentality in Deshaun Watson, who will hold on to the football as long as possible.
Kyahmy Fairbairn.
Yes, take this one. Sure. Yes. Or Jordan Akins, who's 29 years old as a rookie. But again, we know that DeAndre Hopkins is going to make his plays. So Pat, to me, it's as simple as we just mentioned this. It's as simple as, can the Colts offensive line, which has been outstanding for stretches of the season with so many new players on it, protect Andrew Luck against that talented front four, front seven that the Houston Texans have?
Yeah, I mean, you made an interesting point. You know, playoffs are a lot of time about defensive superstars making a big play, like intercepting a pass, do a strip sacking Andrew Luck, like you said, who is no stranger to turning the ball over. But I mentioned like Sharice Wright's name earlier. You know, it's kind of as a joke, but also kind of like, I feel like this game is going to come down to like one defensive player. It could be a Texans defensive back, you know, blowing a play. It's kind of been, that is like the most glaring weakness for either of these teams. And to me, a game where I'm like really struggling to find an edge, I still think that might be like the tipping point for this game, is this the struggles of the Texans secondary. And so yeah, that's where I'm going. And by the way, Ray, we're kind of talking about the Texans defense though, but don't besmirch them for giving up 470 yards to Nick Foles. I mean, does anyone that can get ripped by the best player in NFL history for 470 yards? So I'm not really sure why you brought that up.
Eagles record, I believe, 471 yards.
Wow. And look, it's not like there's a consensus, like guaranteed pick that everyone believes is absolutely going to win the Super Bowl out of the 12 teams in it. What's your level of confidence for either?
I want to cut you off. Isn't it weird? This is a fascinating class. There's not a Super Bowl favorite. We're right. Breaking down four wild card games. None of these games feel like none of these teams feel like a prohibitive favorite this weekend. It's a very wide open playoffs.
Any of these eight teams can make a legitimate run. I would say though, like of these eight teams that are playing this weekend, maybe these two are on the lowest of that rung. Is that fair? No, I mean, I would say Philly is there and Dallas might be there as well. But look, these are kind of like middle of the road playoff teams. Like we mentioned, they all have flaws heading into this first round of the playoffs, right?
Well, I think that actually the Colts might actually be able to make a run because, I mean, it depends on what their defense, it depends on, because we're talking about their defense and we're saying, well, they haven't produced a ton of turnovers and they haven't even produced a ton of sacks either. But, and so you look at it and go, well, they're not making those kind of game changing plays that you look at and say, well, you know, that's a defense that I think can really do something. But they've been outstanding. Their run defense is outstanding. They've given up over the final 10 games, they've given up 16.4 points per game, no more than 28 points over that run. They haven't allowed more than 115 rushing yards since week 7. They've allowed under 95 in 6 of their last 8 games. Like you take a look at this and you say, all right, this defense might not be like the flashy. They might not have all of those takeaways that you would expect, and it might not happen again this week either. But like, they're really good. And then on the other side of the ball, they have Andrew Luck, who is back to being Andrew Luck. So I look at the Colts and I say, this is a team. The only concern I have is like I mentioned earlier, turnovers. If it wasn't for that one thing, I think I'd be picking the Colts here and I'd be feeling very comfortable. As it is, if I had to pick someone in this game, I'm picking the Colts. But yeah, it's that one thing worries me a little bit in this particular matchup. But I do think the Colts are built in such a way that they could make a run.
The Colts have one of those kind of classic, this playoff like streak teams. So they have a superstar quarterback. They have an upstart defense. And when Ryan Kelly is healthy, they can even run the ball. So
good point.
I agree with Ray. They're kind of the ingredients there for like a hashtag surprise playoff team.
And it's not exactly fair for me to say this because he's been out for so long. But I think if Will Fuller was in the fold here, this would be a different discussion. But, you know, their passing game becomes super linear when he's out, and he's obviously out.
My dynasty league team, Will, you got to get well soon, man.
Awesome football player. Love Will Fuller. Okay.
Oh, and by the way, I have to make a correction, because I was saying something about the Colts takeaways. They're actually 10th in the league in takeaways. I thought that they were lower than that. So yeah, so even that's there. So it's not even, would you guys have guessed that they were that high?
No.
To me, they felt a little hashtag opportunistic, so I would not have guessed 10th, though. No.
It's odd. You know, whenever I go back and watch these Colts games, I'm just, like, so focused on Andrew Luck, and, like, I haven't other than Darius Leonard, like recognized prime time highlight reel Colts defensive players that you lock into, you know, that you get excited to watch. But as you talked about, like Matt Eberflus and that defensive unit as a whole has really played strong, despite, again, the lack of top end talent, which is a fun little storyline to follow. Okay, let's keep it going with the Sunday 1 o'clock Eastern game. Again, the only time that matters. Los Angeles Chargers and the Baltimore Ravens. Pat, I feel like these two
teams. We're editing that out later.
I feel like these two teams just faced off against each other.
They did. They did quite literally just face off against each other. And but is there anything more Chargers than they tie for their conference's best record, but they not only do they not get a bye, they get the number 5 seed and then have to travel across the entire continental United States to play one of the hottest teams in football. It's a
by the way, very, an very early game.
Draw. Yeah.
Yes, like, exactly.
So yeah. Late afternoon. Get the early game.
Yes. It's unlucky draw, to put it mildly. Do you want my thoughts on the game, Josh?
I do, Pat. I would love that. That's why you're here.
I think, I like the Chargers as a team, but I mean, this to me sets up as a Ravens victory. Scattered points in my head. You know, Phillip Rivers has had a tendency the past few years to really wear down as the season drags on. 3 touchdowns, 6 interceptions over his final 3 starts. How's he going to be playing going into the playoffs? I feel like this just really sets up for the Ravens. Like I said, they're at home, they're averaging 230 rushing yards per game since Lamar Jackson became starter against the Chargers run defense that kind of never really got healthy this year. They put Denzel Perryman on injured reserve, Corey Legit on injured reserve. They have decent statistics against the run, though, but just kind of a run defense that's all year been undermanned, just not playing with their best personnel. And like I said, just kind of limping going in the playoffs. They weren't impressive against the Broncos, even in week 17. And just maybe an older team getting banged up, just kind of drawing the wrong team at the wrong time in the Chargers and the Ravens. Now, some people have made the point, and this could be if the Chargers are going to win, it could be based on they're the first team to kind of get a second crack at this Lamar Jackson rushing attack. And they actually fared better against it, I think, than anyone down the stretch. The Ravens had, quote unquote, only 160 rushing yards against the Chargers, which was the fewest against any team. But so maybe if the Chargers, hopefully learn some valuable lessons from that game. But to me, this just sets up as a very, very unfortunate draw for the Chargers.
I think you made some really good points there, Pat. Like, point that the Chargers at one section of the season were considered perhaps a top 3 team in the NFL. But we've seen Melvin Gordon get hurt. We've seen Keenan Allen slow down a little bit. Like, this just hasn't been exactly the right team at this time to enter here. And now they face, as you talked about, the first playoff matchup on the road. And Ray, we talked about this last week with Evan, that Baltimore has made a complete shift in their offense. They went from one of the most pass-heavy teams, in the league to the most run-heaviest team in the league. And again,
most run-heavy team since the 70s, if you count the 230 yards per game and not the full season rushing stats.
And I don't remember who tweeted it today, but if you extrapolate Lamar Jackson's carries from has however 7 games he's been a starter, is it 8 games? It's 7 games, one of the two, across the entire season. 7. I think he has the second most in the NFL, just behind Ezekiel Elliott. Did anyone else see that tweet? Because that's bananas.
I did not, but that's pretty crazy.
Ray, give us your thoughts in this contest, since I've been talking way too much.
Well, I think the points have been made about why this is a bad spot for the Chargers. And Pat, I mean, you didn't even bring up that the Chargers are out of linebackers. Like, they don't have linebackers. Tavis Brown is out for the season now. They've been playing safeties at linebacker. They've been playing Adrian Phillips at linebacker and Derwin James. Like, they don't have them anymore. And that might be a problem against it. Yeah. It might not be a great thing for them. So I look at this situation, and I think that the Chargers are still a better team than the Ravens. And I think that they, on paper, you look at it and you say, this is a better football team than the Ravens. But what the Ravens are doing right now and the way that they're playing the game, the way that they're keeping their elite defense, even their elite defense is, well, obviously elite. However, they don't even have to play that many plays anymore because they're controlling the ball on the other side. They have a running game that just works with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. They're going into a situation here where this run defense has not really been exceptional already and is now, as you guys mentioned, a little bit banged up. Phillip Rivers was absolutely shut down the last time he played them. Now he has to go on the road in an early start. All of this is just nasty. The one thing that I'm gonna that kind of gives me hope if I'm a Chargers fan is that Lamar Jackson is a rookie quarterback. Rookie quarterbacks in their first start in the playoffs have traditionally not done very well. And he still has yet to prove that he is able to, if the running game is not working, or if for some reason the Chargers get a special teams touchdown and a deep pass connects with Tyrell Williams or Mike Williams, or if something happens and they're suddenly down by multiple scores late in the second quarter, in the third quarter, that he's able to carry this game, this passing game, with his arm. He's able to carry this offense with his arm. He's not shown that yet. Everything we've seen from him as a passer suggests that that's probably not going to go well if they're forced to do that. And so I think that there's going to come a time for this team in which that happens, and that'll probably when their season ends. I don't know if that'll be this week, but that at least would give me some hope for the Chargers.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, kind of spoiler alert, every playoff team likes to get out to an early lead.
But, that'd be helpful, yeah.
If the Chargers get out to a 10-0, 14-0 lead, and like you said, Lamar Jackson has no choice but to pass, it could get very ugly for the Ravens very quickly. It's just, you hit on more points to slay. I just feel bad. Like, the Chargers defense is set up so well to stop modern passing attacks, not this 1970s, we are going to run 55 times rushing attacks. It's just a uniquely Chargers draw.
First, Ray, I want to get back to what you said. Rookie quarterbacks are 9-15 since 2000 with 6 straight losses. I believe Rich wrote that in the column that you both posted on Roto-World, which you can go check out. And I don't mean to keep referring back to what Evan and I talked about, but what Evan and I talked about last week.
Why don't you just have Evan
was,
on?
Well, I did in the first half of this episode, just FYI. What he talked about was what the Ravens do, and it's been a narrative that all these coaches have talked about for years, is, hey, we want to – and what announcers do during the game is, hey, the offense's goal – is to eliminate, you know, 10, 15 plays from the opposing offense. But the Ravens actually do that with how they play football. And so if you only have like 6 drives a game against the Baltimore defense that is playing at home in this contest, that's not necessarily set up for success, basically for any team. And that's a difficult one to overcome, especially on Ray, as you mentioned, with Gus Edwards and Lamar Jackson and Kenneth Dixon running down your throat at safeties instead of linebackers. So,
and I just want to point out Gary Patterson on the
TCU's film coach?
Room, TCU's coach on the coach's film room, which for some reason ESPN is getting rid of, and that's a discussion we can have in the future.
Bad decision. I like you, ESPN people, but. Bad decision.
My mind is blown. But anyway, on the one during the Alabama game, he said it best. He said the best defense is on the sidelines. Like, that's it. Like, the other team rarely scores when your defense is on the sideline. And so if the Ravens are able to do that, I mean, it just makes them that much more dangerous. And I think that the point we're making here is this is just a bad, unfortunate spot for the Chargers. I wish that they had gotten any other draw. I think that they would be a dangerous team for any other team. But this is a bad spot for them. But all hope is not lost. Like, there are still win conditions here for them. And they just need to probably score early to make that happen.
Is Hunter Henry back for this contest? Do we know?
The reports have said
you're asking the wrong people. Got to ask Stephen A. Man.
God, that you just destroyed ESPN in two.
I know, which I don't like to do. I do have a great deal of respect for ESPN. But the Bolts have been kind of cagey on it. My guess is no. Okay. And even if he is, it's going to be like 10 to 12 snaps. Okay. So
yeah, and for me, if Chargers are going to win, it's going to have to be like a Joey Bosa game, like a monster game, taking advantage of one.
If they're not going to win, it really is as simple as they just got to get an early lead. That is the formula for the Chargers to win this game.
It's like,
because the Chargers can play ball control offense almost as well as any team. Not as well as the Lamar Jackson Ravens the past 2 months, but the Chargers can really play ball control offense as well. So,
any closing thoughts, Ray?
I mean, I guess like we're not going to do any fantasy anything? No DFS on the Roto World podcast?
No.
None. This is it. God, do you have any wise words, wise thoughts to give the people?
Play T.Y. Hilton.
Flex Fairbairn?
Oh, definitely. If you're showdowning, Fairbairn is the way to go.
There we go.
Yeah, that's Nick Menzio and I hit on this revolutionary strategy for the showdown last Sunday night. Flex kickers in the flex spot.
This revolutionary bonus point spot that everybody's been doing all year, but you guys mastered it in 1 week.
And it did not work when we did it.
that's called fantasy football. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. That was Pat. That was Ray. God, it's so good to have more than one other person I get to talk to. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you all next week. And I think we might have a second podcast coming out later today as well. This is a bonus episode, so stick around for that. And we'll talk to you all soon. See ya.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.